This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Film Pastor Podcast. This is the sister podcast to the Lambcast, which can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com. Once again, I am your host, The Vern, and yes, as always, I am giving you another smorgasbord, another sampler plate of other delicious podcast shows that you should definitely check out. Yes, it is another Grazing with Podcasters episodes. I enjoy putting these together because I want to give you, the listener, you know, maybe some other podcast shows to check out, you know, and so I'm hoping that after you listen to this show, you'll go to their sites and hear the full episodes, and you follow them, they'll follow you, and whatnot. We'll become this big, happy community of podcast listeners and whatnot, but I'm not going to dabble on anymore. Let's go ahead and get to our first show. So our first show comes to us from the best and worst of the best podcast. Now, this show is hosted by Nate Jones and Austin Gold. And on each episode, they each pick a filmmaker. And then they talk about the worst movie that they've done. And then the best movie they've done. And for this particular episode, they decided to tackle the movies of Terry Gilliam. And the worst movie they talk about is The Brothers Grimm. And the best movie they talk about of his is 12 Monkeys. And this is the intro part of the episode. This is the section where they talk about their familiarity with Terry Gilliam's work. And it's a lot of fun. So I'm not going to dabble anymore. Let's go ahead and get that one to listen, all right?
All right, welcome back to the podcast. This is episode 59. We've got director Terry Gilliam on this week. His highest rated film is 12 Monkeys, and his lowest rated is The Brothers Grimm. How you doing, Austin?
I'm doing just great. Terry Gilliam, nominated for one Oscar for the film Brazil for Best Writing Screenplay, written directly for the screen. So yeah, like we thought about this before on the last podcast, it is an original screenplay for Brazil.
Yeah.
I looked over his filmography before this and excuse me, I'm actually surprised at the films that he's done.
Yeah.
I didn't recognize his directorial debuts like at all from the films that I've seen from him. I've seen at least a couple of them now, but that's crazy because
he's not just like a Monty Python type of director.
Yeah, like he started with the Monty Python, right, but then moved into...
He's not just a comedy guy.
You know, Brazil.
Yeah, more serious stuff.
Fisher King, 12 Monkeys, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. and now he's currently filming The Man Who Killed Don Quixote.
Oh, Quixote.
Quixote, yeah.
Yeah, Don Quixote.
Yeah, excuse me. I it's hard to pronounce that. but yeah. So he's had quite the filmography for what he's done in his whole career. And he's really been an interesting, diverse director.
Oh, yeah.
That I'm just kind of amazed by. Yeah.
But it's funny that The Holy Grail is his highest rated film, though.
It is?
I mean, not, sorry, it's...
12 Monkeys.
It's his second highest rated film. I think 12 Monkeys is highest rated. Yeah, but it's just funny that it's that high.
It is surprising because, you know, I feel like that would have been the highest rated.
I know. But it's also funny that his like most kind of... I mean, I guess Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is similar, but Monty Python is definitely, I mean, it's like a skit, it's a skit kind of thing. So it's so much different than the rest of his film work. And yet that's the one that's almost most highly
renowned.
Yeah.
Well, that was very early in his career too.
Definitely.
I think that's why it would be so highly rated is because that's what kind of launched his career.
Well, which is a great movie too. And
on top of that,
he had the power of the whole Monty Python cast with him too. It wasn't really just him, you know, it was, I mean, everyone was a writer on that and everyone was, you know, they were all a part of the process. So.
And I was going to get into the writing process for them.
I think it is his highest rated film. The reason I didn't pick it is because he co-directed it with Terry Jones.
Oh yeah.
So it is his highest rated. It just, it was co-directed, so I just went to the next one, which is 12 Monkeys. So that actually is his highest rated film.
Okay.
I think it's like an 8.4, and 12 Monkeys is an 8.0.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's cool. But as far as like from the last episode, I'll mention their writing process just a bit, because from what I remember from a doc I watched, they would actually go on vacations together. Like they would go...
The Monty Python guys?
Yeah, the whole crew.
Yeah.
They would go to the Bahamas and they would write on the beach, just chilling. And they would just like make jokes all day.
That's cool.
Yeah, and that was essentially the writing process for all those films back in the day.
Yeah, so well, they had the Flying Circus. I believe that was a TV show, right? I think it was a show.
Yeah,
And then they had like Life of Brian and all the other movies.
Yeah, yeah. They've had quite the career. A lot of people are... still huge fans of it.
There's Broadway shows based off of their stuff.
Spam-a-lot.
Yeah, and
I've seen that. It's a pretty funny play.
Yeah, and then I mean there's tons of books that have come out, and they did a show recently, I think in London or something, like a live show in like 2014, because I think there was some lawsuit with the movie and they lost the lawsuit. So they had to pay like $900,000 or something like that. So I can't remember. It was like a copyright issue or like some rights holding issue. Somebody wanted money. And so they said they were going to hold like a last little like tour, like a live kind of sketch on stage thing or whatever. I can't remember what the title was, but they weren't subtle about the fact that they were just doing this to raise like money to pay off this thing. But they still made it like, you know, a funny experience, but I wish I could have gone to that, but I don't think it was in the US. I think it was just in Europe.
That's interesting. That's pretty
funny. Yeah, but I think, and that they said that was like the last time they're all going to be like
together,
you know, in something together. Yeah, because they've all got their own stuff. I mean, they're old and some, you know, semi-retired at the very least, but they're all working on their own stuff too.
I don't know. I like the history that they've enveloped on comedy, and they just always had such a different style compared to everyone else.
Yeah. Well, I feel like, I don't know. I always think of them when I think of like quintessential, like British humor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, definitely.
It's very self-deprecating.
And it's very over the top.
Yeah.
Like it's just very.
Yeah.
Almost not over-exaggerated, but absurd.
Yeah.
At that point, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the movie is, I mean, the Holy Grail at least is pretty, it can be surreal at times, you
I
know?
I mean, Life of Brian.
Right.
If you guys haven't seen the ending, you could honestly just watch that as a whole and understand that you just got to stay on the right side of life.
That's a great song.
That what they say?
Yeah.
All right. So that was the segment of They Did About Terry Gilliam. If you want to hear the rest of that episode, please go on to the website bwbpod.com. You can also follow them on Twitter at bwbpod. But yeah, I recommend checking out their other episodes. It's kind of fun hearing them talk about different filmmakers and talking about their best movies as well as their worst movies. So a lot of fun stuff. Check it out. All right, our next episode comes to us from the Flitz Watcher podcast. And this is a show hosted by Kobe and Helen. And each time they have a different guest on to talk about either a new movie or a classic movie. And their guest for this episode was Will of Exploding Helicopter Podcast. And they decided to talk about the Scarlett Johansson, Jonathan Glazer directed flick Under the Skin. This is a very stylistic sci-fi movie. And if you know Will and his second podcast, Exploding Helicopters, this is a very strange choice for him to talk about. I mean, because you would just never expect Will to actually enjoy this movie, but he does. He's had some really nice things to say about it, and it was really cool to hear. So I'm going to let them talk about this movie, and then I'll be back. All right?
Cool. This is what happens when you let, you know, commercial directors make a feature film. They've got no idea about how to actually tell a story.
Helen.
It's an odd film. It's definitely a very, very strange film, but it's also very stylized and weirdly beautiful, very interesting, and Scarlett Johansson in it is incredible. She's just this kind of strange alien being walking through, even when she's just walking through the town, you can just tell that even though she's sort of dressed down from what we normally expect of her, she's still this completely unique being in this world that is not made for her. And there's just so many things that I noticed the second time around that I'd kind of got caught up in the weirdness and trying to work out what was going on in the first time round that I didn't pick up on or I'd completely forgotten. Like the bit, there's a bit much later on where she's trying to tap along to the music with her fingers and she can't quite do it. And she's trying to kind of settle into this world that is obviously never going to happen because she's so alien to it, but she's kind of trying but failing as well. So it's kind of weird and sad and just really odd.
And I think you've touched on one of the things which I can well imagine, certainly I got hung up on and bogged down on the first time viewing, is the more avant-garde aspects of the film, because the film opens with this very abstract sequence and there is another one about sort of perhaps two-thirds of the way through the film. And I think, you know, and there's also this recurring, and Joe, which Joe mentioned, this recurring room within the film, which seems to be something to do with Scarlett Johansson's inner world. I mean, it's not really clear. It's never explained. And I think it's very easy to get kind of hung up on those particular elements of the film, especially perhaps on a first-time watch. And actually, the thing that I've appreciated on the rewatch is those elements are not that important, and it's the details that you know, you, and that the finger tapping moment is a great example of, you know, Scarlett Johansson's kind of developing sort of humanity in the film. You know, those are the sort of things that actually are important, and I think those are the things to sort of focus on in terms of going in and watching this film and getting from it what there is.
Yeah, I think the less you try and explain it, and I think it's kind of, there's enough in it for you to sort of work out that, you know, maybe she needs these men as kind of a food source. And because obviously when she moves away from this house later on, she becomes more vulnerable. So you could kind of see it as that. And the less you try and think of it in a narrative or in a linear way or in a way that makes sense, the more you can kind of enjoy it and look around it, I think was definitely the second time round. And she has a couple of relationships in it, and the one that she has with the guy with the disfigured face is one of the sort of, it's very strange but also quite tender and very, very human as well for this character who's very alien. And I think that's one of the more interesting moments in it as well, when she's sort of in the car with him for the first time.
Absolutely. And that moment of the film, I think that's the bit where it pivots, I suppose, where there's a noticeable change in Scarlett Johansson's character. And I think that's, is that the first of the people that are taken back to the room that is essentially, well, the one that is let loose, yeah. Essentially. And it's off the back of that she then sort of, there's a noticeable character change, and she goes on the run from what her life is at that particular point in time.
Well, the guy on the motorbike.
Indeed.
Yeah.
The mysterious guy in the motorbike.
Yeah. This is quite an odd character following around. I mean, should we talk about that room, the room kind of dark sequence? Because there's a lot of elements in this film which really add to how kind of striking it is. The black room, the music is kind of haunting and ever-present. And
it's got
just,
a good look.
The general kind of special effects of it are actually quite subtle, but very kind of, but really good.
It's like a little mating dance that they do. They kind of have like a little dance. It's kind of a little bit Twin Peaksy in the way that they do their dancing as well. It's kind of like they're not
the dwarf
they're
from
not
Twin
quite
Peaks.
Yeah. Dancing in time with the music, and it's all a little bit weird. But
you're putting quite a nice spin on being consumed into Scarlett Johansson's diesel sex dungeon.
I don't know what to say. The second time watching it, I think like yourself, I could take a bit of a step back and just to kind of appreciate it. And the worst thing, the scenery is really nice. The scenery was just genuinely really nice. There's one point where you're looking over the beach and it's just set on, there's a fixed camera and you could just see that kind of waves coming over, and there's like a mist that was just curling round over the beach, which just looked really cool. So I can see definitely why it was a style of a substance kind of thing. How much I enjoyed this film, I'm not sure I would say I enjoyed it, but I was definitely intrigued by it.
I don't think it really wants you to enjoy it. I don't think that's the purpose of it. I guess maybe it starts thinking about this idea of, you know, being inside certain skins, and you could take so many different angles from it. I mean, one thing I watched it for the second time round was how different a character is. In the first half of the film, she's she's a very strong female character. She holds all the power. Mm-hmm. She manages to lure these men back relatively easy into the diesel sex dungeon.
Men don't come off in this film very well, no. I don't think.
But then when she's out of kind of her comfort zone, when she's out into the wild and, you know, with people that she can't control or she's trying to fit in, then she becomes very vulnerable and things don't end well.
So you can listen to the rest of that episode and more by going onto the site flitzwatcher.tv. You can follow the Flitzwatcher podcast on Twitter at flitzwatcherpod. Be sure to follow the host Kobe and Helen as well. Kobe can be found at Kobe Star on Twitter, and Helen can be found at the Cat Film Fan on there as well. If you want to check out more of what Will is doing on his show Exploding Helicopters, follow him on Twitter at Topper Fireball. Alright? Moving on to our next show, this is from the show We Got Five Podcast. Now, this is part of the Core Temp Arts Podcast Network, and this one is hosted by Peter and Devin, and each episode they tackle a top five list. It could be anything from top five favorite basketball teams, top five favorite Disney films. Recently, I think they did a show about top five movie quotes. But this one is about top five TV shows that were gone too soon. And for this section, we are going to be playing their number one choices, all right? So I think this first is Peter's choice and then Devin's choice. So let's go ahead and check that out, all right?
All right, my number one is a show that I came on very, very late for. I probably watched it a few years ago, and this ended back in 91. And the reason I was told to check this out is because somebody knew that I was big into like movies, and you know, I said I watch all types. He's like, well, you know, check this show out, I think you'll like it. You know, it's very kooky, very weird, very quirky, and the characters are all weird. But it's Twin Peaks. Funny enough, the show is coming back.
I was about to say, I've heard something about that show, but maybe that's what it was, that it's coming back. Okay.
Yeah, it's coming back out in May. May 21st looks like a limited event series. And so I hope they're going to answer some questions. But the thing is, it's not going to pick up where it left off, obviously. It's going to be 25 years later.
Oh, okay.
So it's going to be, yeah. So it's going to be interesting. So to speak. Yeah, and right. And then we're also going to get a bunch of returning actors from the original show. So looks like the original showrunner is going to return. It's going to be on Showtime. That's going to be the problem for me because I don't have Showtime. But
oh, that's a CBS affiliated.
I'll be very interested in checking it out for sure. But the original show, man, it was about, you know, it starts off with a murder. And, you know, throughout the first season, you try to figure out who it was. And then the second season, like, it wasn't very good. But towards the end of it, in the season finale, something happens and you're like, wait, what the fuck? Like, wait, they're going to end right there? But it got canceled. So that was the problem. So I'm glad that I came on it very, very late because I didn't wait 25 years to try to get an answer, you know, like a lot of its fans. So it's one of those cult classics is a thing. Like, I don't know if you'd be able to get into it because it's just so weird.
I feel like I heard someone talk about it before and I was like, doesn't sound like it's my show.
Yeah, it took me about two or three episodes to really get into it. And once I got into it, I was binging this like every single night. Sometimes two, three episodes, just, you know, going to bed extremely late.
Is this when you were in the military or?
No, this was before I started podcasting and before Preston was born. So at least 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, and I remember one specific episode, so, and it's so weird because it kind of started like a trend, you know, like this was before X-Files and all these other, you know, other shows. And There's one episode where it ends like so creepily that I got really scared that I wanted to watch the next episode so that it, that last image or scene wasn't in my, on my mind.
Right, right, right.
You know, so it can do that too. It, like, it has its light moments, it's got its funny moments, and then it can also scare the shit out of you at, in one moment.
Maybe one day, or you know what? I'll just try. Maybe I'll check out the new show.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm really curious to see. I should start doing some research just to see if it's going to be a prerequisite, you know, needing to see the original to kind of understand what's going to happen. Because that's why they're bringing it back. Like, I feel it's for the fan base. You know, it's not to continue on, you know, and make money. Like, no, it's a limited release. So kinda this
like
is
Dallas.
Like, yeah. So I don't know.
Mm. Well, I hope you enjoy it, sir.
Yeah, I hope so. I think Bloodbath over at Blood Guts and Blu-ray. I think he's going to be covering it on TV at My Brain. So
oh, okay. So check that out. All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're here.
You're my number one. Everyone, the moment everyone's been waiting for. Your return and your number one.
Well, yeah. I mean, like I said, as soon as we knew that we were going to do this, this is my number one. It's probably one of the funniest shows I've ever watched on television. I assume I've talked about it a bunch, but it's super cute. So cute.
What did you just say?
So cute. It's from the show. Anyway, it's happy endings. They used to say it on the show.
Okay, so, I thought you were telling me the title. I'm like, wait, what?
No, they would say it's so cute, but they would say so cute. But
okay.
Yeah. Happy endings. It's an amazing show. ABC, they're dead to me. I hate ABC because of this. It lasted 3 seasons, not long enough. It had is it Damon Wayans? What was his what was Damon Wayans' son's name?
It wasn't.
Oh, it
Junior?
Is Damon Wayans. It is Junior.
Yeah,
I was about to say right. Eliza Coop, Alyssa Cuthbert, Alyssa Cuthbert is I don't know.
Oh, Alyssa, yeah, Alicia. Is it Alicia Cuthbert?
Yeah, all
is it
I know
SH?
Is. Yeah, all I know about her is she is fucking amazing.
She used to be a foot model.
Used to be? I didn't know.
Someone told me that.
Oh.
Someone that knew me.
Well, yeah, and Casey Wilson. Like, all three of the white women on this show were three different types of white women, but all of them are built to take my money. Like, I would fuck this dog shit out of each and every one of them.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. You had Eliza Coop. She's like the skinny, like, model esque, I guess, type. Then you have the Cuthbert chick, who's like short and like.
I think you just said Cuthbert twice.
Oh, Coop is the first one. It's a super skinny one.
Oh, okay.
One. Cuthbert, like the one that we just talked about, the foot model. She's perfect, like you said, girl next door. And then Casey Wilson, she's like the taller, thick one that you just want to smack them. Never mind. You know what I'm saying? That's all I'm saying.
Casey Wilson?
Yes.
I'm going to have to look her up.
Yeah.
I'll do it later.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she can get it. But yeah, so all of them. I love this show, man. And like every episode was just like hilarious. I've watched so many different episodes that, like, I would show,
how many
like,
seasons?
Three. When people would come three. Over, like, I was just always put on, like, an episode of Happy Endings because it was guaranteed to, like, be funny. So, yeah. Man, I was hurt when that shit didn't come back, man.
I've heard very good things about it.
It's amazing. I don't know why you haven't watched it. I'm gonna be honest with you.
Again, man, look, you're the TV guy. I spent a lot of, look, before Preston was born, I spent every single night watching a new movie.
Okay, once again, that was from the We Got 5 podcast. Again, like I said before, you can follow that show and more by going to the Core Temp Arts Network. Just type in Core Temp Arts. You can follow the show on Twitter at We Got 5 Pod. You can also check out what other things the hosts are doing by following Peter. He's at Rip Citizen, and Devin is at Devin Lamar. All right, so definitely check that stuff out, folks. It's a lot of fun. Let's get on to our next show. Our next show comes to us from the Super Movie Bros, all right? This is a podcast hosted by Dave and Jay, and I have not had a chance to hear many episodes from them, but I'm starting to. I like the way they cover classic movies as well as new movies. And for this episode, they are live at the Broken Goblet Brewery to do some trivia about the 1987 comedy classic Spaceballs. And they have an audience there, and they ask them trivia questions about the movies. And hell, it's a lot of fun. If I lived in the area, I would have definitely gone down there and see them. But I know they're in shooting in Minnesota, so I couldn't see them right away. But if they ever do a tour up here, I would love to see these guys because they seem like a lot of fun. So let's go ahead and listen to their trivia on Spaceballs.
So, question one. What species is Barf? Right there.
He's a hog, half man, half dog.
He's his own best friend. All right, that man gets a... Did you get me a...
Yeah, is that okay? There was a there.
Yeah, well, we usually do chips. We usually do like the small pour chips, and then for the medium questions, they'll grab one of those. So he gets a medium pour right there, small pour. Question number two, still on the easy ones. What speed was the ship going when it came to a halt, sending Dark Helmet through the terminal?
Didn't I see him? He was right there. You gotta look at everybody.
He got it, he got it. It was going ludicrous speed, so sir, you get yourself a small pour.
For now.
Question number three. What does the banner say on the rear of Spaceballs 1 in the opening scene? Lauren?
It was
back there. Back there? All right, sir?
I break for no one.
It's close enough. We break for no one. It's close enough.
We're going to give it to you.
I'm not going to knock you for having one word off. Come on now. Who am I? All right, these are medium questions. So medium questions are for full pours. Question number one in the medium category. What is written on the license plate for Lone Star and Barf's Winnebago?
I heart Uranus.
No, that's written on the bumper sticker that's on the back.
That's what I wanted for the question.
That's what he wanted. Yeah. That's true. Now, what is written on the license plate? That would have been an easy question if we put it on there. Anybody? Going once, see, going twice. Eesh. No, it is not Eagle One.
It's close.
Right word, wrong number.
Yeah.
Anybody?
Eagle Two?
We can play that game. We can play it.
One through five.
One through five. I don't mind playing this game. Bueller.
Eagle Four. Eagle One.
Hands. Yeah.
There you go.
Honey, did he throw his hand up?
Yes, he did.
Oh. Sir, you get yourself a full pour now.
Woo, damn.
Okay. Righteous, take his keys. Come on. All right, question number two in the medium category. What year Mercedes does Princess Vespa drive? It's so obvious if you just think about it. What year Mercedes does Princess Vespa drive?
It's even on the license plate.
It's so fucking obvious. Think of sci-fi movies with similar names. Honey, that guy? That guy again?
He's the only one with the
theme
up.
Oh, okay.
2001?
2001 A Space Odyssey. That's right. Yeah, it's a paying homage to that. So now this guy gets 2 4 pours, one half pour, and a DUI, and one night in a slam. It's like the 12 Days of Christmas, but
it
like
is.
But like that guy's version.
Yeah.
Yeah, where he misses all the presents
and
in the
and Mel Brooks will bail you out. Yeah.
with all of his money that he made from making this. He doesn't make that much money. All right, now we're on to the hard questions. So the hard questions, what we usually do for these is we give away these cheaper bottles over here. The best part is the people here live get to see all this. The people at home, I'm editing all this shit out. And it's just right when someone dropped the N-word and we had to kick them out and we had to have the police come and there was a riot and stuff like that. We cut that all out, though. Mm. All out of the audio. All of it. Because no one saw shit. All right, so for the hard questions, and this is for these three bottles that are up right here. Name Pizza the Hut's robot sidekick, the one with the sunglasses.
It's getting harder. It's getting hot in here. The best part is de facto. No, it was not Sid.
So
blue shirt, what's up? It was Vinny the Gangster Robot. Come up here and pick out one of these beers, sir.
Good job.
They get harder. I know you got the ludicrous question. I'm like, I'm looking at your eyes, and I'm pointing at you, Plaid.
I want the shirt.
You want the shirt? All right.
He's been holding out the whole time.
Holding out the whole time. He's just like, I don't want to win too much. Next question. Name the actor who ran the radar screen that lost the beeps, the sweeps, and the creeps. Blue shirt again. Hand up faster. Give it to your friend. Be a guy. It was Michael Winslow from the Police Academy films. One of those guys that, like, you know his name, you know who he is, and then you're like, is he still alive? Is he? All right.
So that was from the Super Movie Brothers podcast. You can definitely check out more of what they do by going to the site moviepodsquad.com. You can also follow them on Twitter. They are at Super Movie Pod. Definitely check that out, folks. It's a lot of fun. Let's get on to our next show. All right. Our next show, folks, comes to us from the Video Nation podcast. This one is hosted by Oliver, Daniel, and Tim. And these are cats who basically rip apart a new movie every week, all right? And these are movies that these guys just do not like at all. They do not cover movies that are well-liked. They cover movies that are pretty much despised. At least one of them despises it, though. For this episode, they are covering The Rock, all right? The 1996 Sean Connery, Nicolas Cage flick about the, you know, guys that have to break into Alcatraz to help basically rescue some hostages and debug some sort of nuclear weapon type of thing right there. And I used to love this movie a lot as a kid, but hearing these guys talk about it, it definitely gives a new spin on the movie right there. So I'm going to have them explain it. And they're going to be talking, first of all, they're going to be talking about Nick Cage's set scene in this. And yeah, it's really kind of weird and strange, but I'll have them explain it, all right? I'll be back.
So yeah, Tim, your wish has come true again.
Again. Stop listening to our episodes, directors, okay? Another Nick Cage sex scene. The dirty talk here, talking about sorbet. Yeah. What's this all about?
Peach sorbet persuasion. He also said it was very compelling.
That's interesting. It's very compelling. Just the amuleto cream. Peach sorbet persuasion.
What the hell, Cage?
Oh, God.
That is some next level dirty talk.
When he's interrupted, I seem to remember that he has, like, some really weird way of, like, expressing his dismay at being interrupted during sex. Mm. It's like, this isn't happening!
Yeah. But, well, yeah, and also, we can lump this all in as Cage moment too. He was wearing cowboy boots.
Wow. Knocking them boots.
Yeah, exactly.
This isn't happening.
This isn't happening.
No, I just don't answer.
Like, I want to know what happened in between her telling him that she's pregnant, Nick Cage reacting poorly to it, her proposing to him, this cut scene.
Mm. Yeah, and he's
having sex, but they're not engaged at this moment. What has happened in between?
He's fairly apprehensive about the proposal as well. He's a bit like,
God, I just wanted sex, man!
All fucking summer long!
Where's the Sam Peckinpah, man?
Speaking of Deadfall, we cut back to the Pentagon, and mm-hmm. did you notice who the commander is?
Yep, it was Michael Biehn.
Really?
Mr. Deadfall.
Yep, looking 10 years older in the space of three.
What's happened?
Yeah, Hall of Famer, there we go.
Wow.
I didn't even recognise him, I had to look it up.
I saw the cast list, so I knew he was coming. I recognised him. But
really? I didn't at all.
I mean, I think I'm going to talk about Biehn. Like, throughout this film.
Really?
Yeah.
I've got nothing else to say other than,
it's kind of along those lines, Dan. But I'll get to it. Do you think when they were like, because they do meet up later in the film, Cage and Bean, don't they? Mm-hmm. Do you think they were reminiscing about Deadfall? Like, I bet Nick Cage just doesn't even remember being on that film, but Michael Bean's like, come on, do the filthy fucking speech, please. Come on, man. You filthy fucking.
I feel like it's something that just don't speak about. It's just like, it's something that they've completely repressed. It's like, hey, Nick. How's it going?
No,
yeah, all right.
I bet you, like...
Do you guys know each other? No. Have you worked together before? Nope.
Never worked on a film before.
Bean must, like, resent Cage because in the interim, Cage got his Academy Award.
Yeah, and became considerably more successful than Michael Bean as well.
I know.
Bullshit. Bullshit.
So, Philip Baker Hall gets this idea to use a, quote, professional escape artist and 33-year SAS vet to break into Alcatraz, or to give them advice to break into Alcatraz.
Mm-hmm. 30 minutes late to the party. I think it's too long. Connery coming into the film.
I mean, I was never especially bored during this film, but they could have trimmed it parts down.
Oh, for sure. I don't mind him being introduced now. I think it's important to set up the concept of what's happening at Alcatraz and set up Cage's character first, but I will agree that things could be cut out of this.
Yeah. I would love to get some merchandise from The Rock here. I mean, can you imagine, like, that is a rare picture of Sean Connery signed by Nicolas Cage.
I want to point out as well, there was a bit where Cage's character, Stanley Goodspeed, met with FBI agent Womack. That was his name, wasn't it?
Is he the, like, director?
Yeah.
FBI.
And, you know, he lists his credentials. So why does a chemical weapons expert have both a BA and an MA? Why not a BSc or an MSc? Just did a conversion course. Oh yeah, I did media studies and then went into chemical weapons.
Couldn't find a job with a journalism degree.
This is just like some like screenwriters just like, yeah, what do these fucking boffins have? Like, BA, yeah, sure.
Well, it is written by the guy who directed Street Fighter, so we're not talking about...
Is it? No, it isn't.
Is it Stephen Die Hard D'Souza?
No, Jonathan Hensley, Die Hard 3.
Who is Stephen E. D'Souza?
He did Die Hard 1 and 2.
He definitely worked on something that we've...
Street Fighter, he directed, yeah.
Yeah.
And the next film. That's what you're thinking of. Well, stay tight-lipped. So we hear FBI agent Womack talking about Connery. He says he's a British national. But don't let Connery hear that. Scottish national, you horse's arse.
Yeah, well, there's later in the film, someone says to Connery, come on, you English, my dad was Irish. And and Connery then punches him, and how wasn't there a line like, I'm Scottish, you fucking idiot?
I've literally put that note in, yeah.
It was begging for
it. And it's not even, because obviously, like, Connery has played Irishmen, he's played Russians, he's just done his usual accent. Mm-hmm. But we find out the character is born in Glasgow.
Yeah.
So he is Scottish.
He is Scottish. What's that line from In the Loop where he's like, don't ever call me fucking English again? Yeah. That's what exactly. Connery should
have said. Oh, God.
All right. So that was, once again, the Video Negative podcast. You can definitely follow them on Twitter. They are at Video Negative. If you want to listen to the shows, go on to SoundCloud and just type in the name, the Video Negative podcast. Definitely check it out. I think their most recent episode is about the Flintstones. Yes, the John Goodman, Rosie O'Donnell Flintstone movies that came out around 1995, I believe. But yeah, definitely check that shit out. It's a lot of fun there, alright? Alright, so we're going to take a small little break right now. Here are some ads from other podcast shows. And then we'll be back with our last two clips, okay? Stay tuned.
We'll return after these announcements.
MovieMavericks.com, broadcasting current box office breakdowns, movie news, and reviews. Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
Hey now, even though we're over 200 episodes deep into the Movie Mavericks podcast, it's still not too late to start listening.
Where every show we give you 10 truths, 20 lies, and a bunch of Hollywood secrets.
It's like existentialism slipping into nihilism.
MovieMavericks.com.
Want to know what's happening for the weekend? Then check out Subject Cinema's 3-Minute Weekend, spotlighting all the new films hitting your local theaters. Join host T.C. Kirkham as he gives you the 411 on all the new blockbuster releases, as well as the indies that might be coming to your town, and choices for video on demand as well. 3-Minute Weekend, every Friday morning, from Subject Cinema and eCinema1.com, a member of the LAMB Podcasting Network, a PNR Networks podcast.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Film Pasture. We only have two shows to show to you next. Wait, what the hell am I talking about show you? I've got two other shows to play for you next. Hope you enjoy them. Alright, the next section comes to us from a show that I'm not quite sure if they're just on a long hiatus or they just cancelled, but it's the Moving the Needle podcast, which you can find on Twitter at MTNPod. You used to have a website, but it's not working right now, so I'm not going to give you the URL of that. But this is kind of a cool thing where they basically take two movies and have people debate about them, which is a section I want to try and start for this show as well. But for this one, they are going to be tackling Alien, the 1979 Ridley Scott movie, versus Aliens, plural, the 1986 action movie directed by James Cameron. And I didn't really get a chance to hear who all the hosts were of the show right here, but I believe it's Joe, Hedno, and Rory, and there's another cat too that's talking, but I did not get his name. But yeah, they are all debating about which is better, Alien versus Aliens. And it's more of a, kind of a three against one scenario there. So, you know, I'm going to have you just listen to the show, and then I'll be back, all right?
Plenty to talk about here. So, Alien versus Aliens, how are we going to vote here? Let's start with you, Joe. Which film do you prefer?
I'm going with Alien.
Hanno?
I am going with Alien.
Roy?
I am not going with Alien.
You're adding the S?
S for superior. Yes, sir.
S for sucky.
I am going to depluralize that vote and give you Alien. So 3-on-1 here. Pile up on Roy the way we always like it.
Bring the lube.
So, Joe, as you are our guest, you get to start off on the pile and tell us why you feel Alien... is superior.
I consider myself so lucky to start on top of the pile here.
The top of Dude Mountain.
You get the first shots.
I'm on top of Dude Mountain. Oh, mm-hmm. Dear. you know, they're both, like you said, very different movies. I enjoy both of them, but I feel like Alien really achieved its goal in the simplest way possible. You know, it was as close to true horror as sci-fi can get, I think. And it did it. It did it clean. It did it pretty. And it was, I think, just in general, a little bit more cohesive, I think, than Aliens.
And apparently you have a dog named in honor of the Alien franchise.
Yes. Lieutenant Ellen Ripley McCune is my... she's almost 3 years old, Great Pyrenees, Blue Tick, Coonhound mix, and named after Sigourney Weaver's character. That's how much I love that movie. And I really want to punch people in the face when they say, Ripley, believe it or not. I say, oh, no, actually.
Awesome. So this is a love for the franchise that's endured, as Ripley is... very new. Your Ripley is much newer than the series, which ended in 1997.
Yes.
And maybe gets another one sometime in the next few years. And we'll pretend like the Prometheus series doesn't exist because I like the world better that way.
we'll save that for another podcast.
Or we won't.
Or we won't.
We'll just get right into that one.
I like that with Alien, you know, they're not shoving it in the viewer's face, if you know what I mean. Whereas with Alien,
except
for the face hugger, but that should be shoved in your face. That, you know, that has a purpose. But the Aliens, I feel like it's just so over the top, and I know that's how James Cameron kind of works, but it distracts me. Whereas I think for me with Alien, there wasn't a distraction at all. I was locked in on that movie the entire time.
Wait a second, you're telling me James Cameron is going over the top in a movie that he directed and wrote?
I'm shocked, yes. To tell you, shocked.
I know.
I need to finish my glass of wine here. This is a revelation.
Yes, and next week we'll be discussing Steven Seagal's Hamlet.
Excellent.
All right, well, we'll definitely get deeper into the various reasons why. Hanno, why don't you give us your argument for Alien?
Well, I had a great time hanging out in Atlanta watching both of these films with Joe just recently. And it was really fun to revisit these, you know, kind of with somebody else to just, you know, sit there and kibitz. You're welcome, Dave.
You get extra credit for going all the way to Atlanta to consult with someone.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's
you are, you know, committed to this podcast.
I am. Yes, I bring the commitment.
hopefully someday Henna will go 4 extra hours and maybe we could watch Jaws.
So it was fun to go and see these again and I saw things differently, which was kind of surprised me. And I think I actually saw the directors in these films now that I've seen what, you know, other things that they've done. I saw the style in it. And the one thing that just caught me right off the bat is just in Alien, the amount of silence, the idea of kind of less is more. There isn't a lot of fast movement per se until you basically have the chest burster, and then it's like that thing just goes scrambling off. And it's a slow, slow burn. And I think it's really in the tradition of, you know, good old suspense horror. And I loved the character development far more. I thought the actors, they were older actors, and I think that they delivered better than in Aliens 2. Now, granted, you're not going to have sound bites, but then, you know, I had to weigh that. And, you know, this is something that in our first rehash, I realized that in all of these versus films, I have been picking more traditional kind of filmmaking over the Hollywood flash. And I think that's what Aliens has. It's just that flash. You know, Bill Paxton just makes me want to stick a knife in my head after a while.
Game over, man. It's game over.
And, you know, at least Tom Skerritt doesn't make me want to do that, which I can appreciate. And there's just good tension between the characters in Alien and our resident robot. It just does one of the creepiest, you know, death scenes ever, which is just phenomenal. And I think it just delivered horror as it's meant to be.
All right. Well, that was from the Move the Needle podcast, which, like I said before, is on MTN Pod. And I wish that was on Twitter, at MTN Pod on Twitter. I wish they had more episodes of this stuff because I would be definitely curious to hear more. But yeah, that was the Move the Needle podcast. Let's go ahead and skip to our last show. And yes, folks, it's going to be a shameless plug from yours truly. This last session comes to you from the Screen Trash podcast. This is the new podcast. I started up with my good friend, Jordan Jeske. And for this show, we talked about a movie. And then we talked about the soundtrack that went with said movie. Our most recent episode was on Josie and the Pussycats. But I'm going to be playing you a clip from our very first pilot episode, where we were joined by our good friend, Chum. He plays guitar in a few bands that I'm in. And we talked about our top 5 favorite movie soundtracks. So for this session, we're just going to be talking about what we have as our number 5 pick. So I hope you enjoy it. But this is the last session of the show, all right? Enjoy.
But no.
All right, back to the show.
Get back to the story now. Yes. For this episode, we're not going to be talking about a movie and then reviewing the soundtrack. For this one, we basically wanted to know what everyone's favorite movie soundtracks is. Since this whole show is all about movies and their soundtracks, we just want to get just a basic idea about what we think are our top five favorite movie soundtracks.
It's going to be a hard list. That's tough to decide.
You know,
it really is.
And I don't
because there's a lot of movies out there.
There's tons of them.
With a lot of soundtracks, you know.
And a lot of them are really good.
So this
good.
Is a tough list, man.
Yeah, it is. Well,
Chubb, do you have any ones that you want to mention at all?
I have a lot.
Okay.
Let's go forward and we'll get to it.
Okay, we'll mention those near the end, okay? I've got my five if you want to go with yours first.
What you got?
Okay. Well,
is this how we're doing this? I didn't know. Okay, well, how do you pick from, like, you have movies like La Bamba.
Oh, a great one.
Maybe that's a really good movie
that's
soundtrack.
That's a great soundtrack, yeah.
La Bamba, or when Gary Busey played Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
Buddy Holly movie. Buddy Holly had a lot of good songs.
Oh,
man.
Yeah, dude.
That could be a great movie soundtrack.
It is. Well,
and like I mentioned earlier, it's like Maximum Overdrive. Yeah. That's all AC/DC. I love AC/DC. Everybody loves AC/DC.
Yeah.
That's a great movie soundtrack, too.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of movies to pick from. I don't know which ones you guys are going to pick. I'm excited to hear about it. Let's fucking hear your guys' story about... Should we not swear?
No. You fucking hell, you can swear all the fuck you want to, okay?
But I'm excited to hear your guys' opinions.
I swear the fuck a lot.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of movies to pick from. There's a lot of them to pick from. So,
oh, yeah?
I mean...
Here, jump in my beer.
Oh, where is it?
Oh, that PBR right there.
All right. What you got, Vern?
All right, so my number five, I have to go with Marie Antoinette.
Oh, nice.
Sofia Coppola movie is great because it has a bunch of new wave artists like Adam Ant
Susie and the fucking Banshees.
Susie the Banshees, Hong Kong Garden. And the cool thing too is the version that's in that movie is different than the album version because it's got this classical kind of intro to it in the movie, and then it goes into the song, and I think it just works perfectly. And you wouldn't think that a movie that deals like with 17th century, you know, aristocrats and...
Yeah, but Marie Antoinette, she was a hip chick, man. She really was.
She got beheaded.
Well, well, you know.
But it's got that great montage with the Bow Wow song, I Want Candy.
Oh, yeah. Which actually Bow Wow didn't write, but...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but I do like the version of it, though.
Oh, yeah. They didn't fuck it up.
I just thought that soundtrack was just perfect, and I liked all the instrumentations from Aphex Twin and...
Oh, yeah, and how they fucking got it in with the scenes.
Yeah.
You know, it fit.
It kind of matched right there. Yeah, yeah, that's definitely my number five, is Marie Antoinette.
Nice.
Oh, got one there, Jordan?
I believe I do.
Okay.
Totally out of left field, but I'm gonna go with, fucking Clerks.
Oh, yeah!
Two.
Clerks 2.
Yeah.
See, I know only about the Clerks 1 soundtrack. I'm not too familiar with Clerks 2 soundtrack.
Well, okay, you listen to Clerks 2, and the intro is nothing but Flowers by the Talking Heads.
Oh, yeah.
So...
And that's a great way to open that movie.
Yeah. And, of course, you got the Jackson 5.
Oh, that big montage, ABC.
Yeah. The dance sequence.
Oh, and fuck, gosh.
You got 1979 Smashing Pumpkins in it.
That montage that happened, that kind of brought a little tear to my eye a little bit there.
And fucking. And you ended with a fucking Minneapolis band, Soul Asylum. So. what
Frustration Corporate. Was that the one?
Yeah, Misery.
Misery, yeah.
Yeah, you know, they say misery loves company. Yeah. So, for the kids of the 90s, like myself, hearing all those songs, it's like, holy shit, like, I feel like I'm 12 again or something, yeah, listening to it, you know?
It's a good bet. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, for the nostalgia factor, you know, and I'll tell you one thing, folks, I am not a fucking millennial. Those people can fuck off.
Fucking right there.
You're distancing yourself from those motherfuckers.
I always do.
Okay.
I'm like, no.
But the first one has that Chewbacca song from Supernova.
Chewbacca!
We go for, yeah, I love that Supernova song, Chewbacca. It's got, I think, Ghost Dance Boys Kill the Sats Player.
Yeah, and Soul Asylum is in the first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they, that's an original song written for that movie, though, I think,
well,
it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and they did a music video.
Yeah.
Yeah, with Jeff Anderson going, yeah, they're from Minnesota, so you can guess, like, how fickle they are or something like that.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I love Kevin Smith movies. They always have, like, you know, good soundtracks there.
Oh, Jane, yeah.
Son of Bob had the fucking time.
Well, yeah.
You know?
Kevin Smith loves fucking Minnesota.
Well, I'm glad. Straight shot, Mallrats here.
Well, not only that, like, he references Minnesota quite a bit, if you think about it.
Okay.
Well, think about it. Fucking Clerks, Soul Asylum, Clerks 2, Soul Asylum, Jane, Silent Bob Strike Back, Morris Stand the Time.
But yeah, he only made one movie here, Kevin. What the fuck, alright? You could seriously do Mall... You've done Clerks 2, can do Mallrats 2, okay?
Alright. He should have done Mallrats 2 in fucking Minnesota.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't need to find another mall.
Yeah, exactly.
You can go back to the same mall. It's still up, Kevin. It's still functioning.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
I was in the food court. They have good chips.
So, moving on to my number four.
Wait, can I do my number
five?
Yeah,
please do, man. Sorry,
I
mean, man.
I know that you guys are more into movies than I am, but I'll just throw my two cents.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm going to go with my number five as, I think my number five movie soundtracks of all time. It's a deep choice because I see a lot of movies. It's like, and, you know, they all have these soundtracks. And when I think of soundtracks, I think of, like, movies made about music, okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like movies made about music. That's the easy choice, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, the whole movie's about music, so obviously that soundtrack is really good, right?
Yeah.
Well, maybe not. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, you know? I'll say my number five is Amadeus.
Oh, nice. Amadeus. Classic
1985,
choice.
Classic choice.
Yeah.
Rock like... me Amadeus. Amadeus. I'll go with Amadeus as my number
five. Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
That's a good one.
It is.
Yeah. That came out of left field there for sure. I wouldn't expect that.
I know. It totally came out of left field. I'm thinking Amadeus as my number five.
You're a classy nice. Fucker, chum. Yeah, goddamn.
I'm not that classy.
Man.
What are you talking about?
I'm drinking Coors Light, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, but you're drinking it like a gentleman.
Coors Light is not classy.
Hey, I like them, Amadeus.
Right. So my number five is Amadeus.
Nice.
All right. So that was a session from the Screen Trash Podcast. If you ever want to check out more of that episode and any others, you can do so by going to screentrats.net. That's Trats spelled TRATS.net. We are on Twitter at Screen Trats Pod. So definitely check that out. I think this can wrap up everything right now for this show here, folks. Again, thank you very much for listening, as always. I do know that we will be back with another, hopefully, full, longer episode when we talk about our top five favorite movies that are worth seeing in theaters, all right? We want to know what are the best movies to see in an actual live theater, and we're going to be talking about that hopefully with some guests. I don't want to say who those guests are now because things might change, but
We are going to be talking about the top five best movies to see in theaters, and hopefully I'll have my co-host, Kristen Lopez. I want to hear about the stuff she's done at the Turner Classic Movie Festival. She recently had an interview with an Academy Award winner, and we'll definitely find out what happened during the interview when we come back for our next full episode. But anyways, that's it right now. If you ever want to follow the show, you can do so by going to Twitter. We are at FilmPasture. We're also on Facebook. Just type in the words FilmPasture on there. As well, for me, I am at Video Vanguard on Twitter. But yeah, I think let's wrap everything up right now. Please go on to the site, largeassmovieblogs.com. Go to the podcasting network section and follow the shows on there too, all right? I know a lot of the shows that I mentioned on here are not part of that network, but that's all right. You're right. I would still recommend checking them out. But yep, that's going to close the thing up right now. Enjoy, everybody. Have a great rest of the week, and I will speak with you. Catch you later. Bye.